Okay, here we go. Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. As we get started here, as you know, with continuing in Yeshayahu, I'm just going to review after we already set up, if you recall, the chronological points. Thank you. The chronological points last week of Prakim, Zayin, Chet, and even the first six verses of Perek Tet of chapter 9. What we're going to be seeing this week is really not only engaging within the psukim themselves of the beginning, the end, really, of Perek Tet and the beginning of Perek Yud. But we're also going to take a look at, again, the political philosophy and how this is going to be connected to the religious ideals of Yeshayahu. Just to, again, bring back and, again, really to summarize for a moment what we basically saw, if you remember from the pointers that we made last week, as we saw that Perek Tet is going to begin with the last of... The mic is working only when it's close enough. Okay, thank you. Okay, I'm going to try it like this without the... Is it working? Not really? A little better? Okay, this is supposed to pick it up a little closer even. Okay. Yes? Better? Okay, thank you. What we're going to see is that right after we began Perek Tet with, if you recall, the last of the stages of Yeshayahu's Nevuot to Ahaz, the king at the time, wherein he's already going to tell him that the impending danger, the imminent, again, threat of Ritzin Melech Aram Pekach Ben Remaliah is supposed to, if you remember, what is he advising him? Stay neutral. Again, don't try to ally yourself with any of the other nations. He says, okay, they'll come in, but Shar Yeshuv, again, everything else is going to be returned. There may be a little bit of a disaster. You'll ward them off. Everything will be okay. If you ally yourselves with Ashur, and this gives us the sense that there was a continuation of these Nevuot, Ahaz doesn't listen. He does ally himself, and ultimately, again, this, as we know, is going to bring to troubles to Am Yisrael, but Hashem, through the Navi, is going to comfort them. Don't worry, because Maher Shlal Chashbaz, the spoils may be taken, and the north may be destroyed, but there is going to be some level of salvation. Ultimately, not only is Asher going to be destroyed, but the very last part of the Nevuot, if you remember the beginning of Perek Tet, that what's going to happen is that there's going to be not only a great salvation, but instead of the foreign king that is going to be appointed by the invading enemies, you're going to have your own king. He's going to be a descendant of Malchut Beit David. This is going to revive the entire nation. That's what we saw until now. Now, what's interesting is that we basically see that all these Nevuot that apparently were given over the course of months, maybe even years to Ahaz, they really are all going to be combined under three main issues, right? We've been discussing this all along, but now before we get to the next theme, to be able to appreciate, again, I'm going to say an idea that we find that serves as a motif almost through all the Nevi'im Achronim. Nonetheless, it's going to be significant to see it here in Yeshayahu in a very, very overt way. Again, take a look and note that Yeshayahu, who is a religious advisor, he's the king. What is he really advising the king on? What are all these Nevuot that we've been speaking about? They're all political issues, political, military. Again, the point here is that the Navi really wants to deliver these messages, again, explaining that these political ideas, again, during the time of Ahaz, again, are really linked to religious ideas. For example, having an alliance, being afraid of Pekach ben Remaliah and Ritzin Melech Aram, this is really an expression going back to the name of the child of Immanuel. Do you remember that if you really believe in God, then you don't need to seek these political alliances? That was idea number one. Again, don't be afraid of them. There will be some threat to the land, but you have to have trust in God. Secondly, again, the other idea of not only the idea of don't rely on other people, political issues are going to be intertwined with religious issues. Idea number two, we can basically summarize as trust in Hashem. Again, anticipate the coming, again, of Hashem. And you remember within those psukim of Perechet, we saw trust in Hashem and don't seek after other gods. Don't seek after those who pursue avot and yidunim, those who pursue all different forms of sorcery. That was idea number two. And lastly, idea number three are the chazionot, the nevuot, the prophecies and the visions, again, with regard to the future, and that is to have the not only the belief and the faith, but even the optimism that good things are going to come thereafter. And by the way, what is the paradigm of good things, the beginning of Perek Tet? If you have the establishment of Malchut Beit David restored. And this is an interesting idea that we find by all the Nevi'im, that the antithesis to destruction isn't simply rebuilding, physical rebuilding of the country. The antithesis of destruction of both the north and the south is the reestablishment of Malchut Beit David. Right, a similar idea in Amos of, again, and we'll talk a lot about Amos today, Harachaman, can we say this, Hu yakim lanu et sukat David hanofalet. But Amos is talking to the north. It seems that the antithesis and the bomb of all of the ails of the country are going to be solved through the establishment of Malchut Beit David for two reasons. Number one, the kingship of Malchut Beit David represents for the people, again, the united stronghold under David HaMelech. And secondly, we know that from the time of David, or namely from Shlomo and on, there's been Piluk HaMelucha, the separation of Melucha, and the weakening thereby of the entire nation of Israel. And therefore, the re-strengthening of the people is not only going to be manifest through autonomy, but basically through the unity, once again, of Malchut Beit David. And therefore, you're going to find this motif over and over again. What we've basically seen then through these different ideas, the political messages that are linked to the religious issues, again, the salvation of God, the comfort of Malchut Beit David, not to rest your laurels on other gods or other forms of knowing what's going to happen, already tells us something very specific about the Navi HaMelech. And this is going to be significant, as you see from your maps, especially by Yeshayahu, because he's going to be almost inseparable from the political, historical events that we see. Now, until now, for those of you who are familiar, especially with Nevi'im Rishonim, what you've seen is really historiography, basically stories of history, the narratives of history that have come alive from the perspective of the Navi. So he's giving you religious messages based on stories. Here, he's actually going to chart out what's going to happen historically. This is where we get the impression that Nevi'im see into the future, that they have these crystal balls, and what the Nevi'im here, like Yeshayahu was saying, don't rely on other crystal balls. Again, rely on us, because we're messengers of Hashem. Now, what really is this idea of the Navi who's going to serve to try to impart, again, a political, nationalistic message to the king? Again, if his persona is really one of a religious nature. The idea here is that what a Navi is coming to tell the king in particular is that God rules the world, that whatever political events are going to happen, and we're going to chart this right now as we continue in Perek Tet, that is, you see all this, and he's going to, not just in these prakim, but in the future prakim, when we get to the Masa, if you remember that we introduced last week, the collection of the Nevuot that he's going to deliver against the Goyim, you're going to see that, wow, it seems like he knows history. He really is going to be able to chart geographically exactly how the Assyrian army is going to enter Eretz Yisrael. So you can imagine, by the way, that Bikoret HaMikra, again, the biblical critics, they look at the stories of Yeshayahu, his prophecies, and what do they say? Who wrote them down? When were they written down? All post facto. That's right, Yeshayahu doesn't know this. Again, this is all post facto. However, we, as believing Jews, who believe not only in the Nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu, but all subsequent prophets, what do we believe? That when Yeshayahu is delivering these political, military messages, does he know what's going to happen? Yes, and the very fact that he gives different options, and they're given over different stages, what he wants to tell them is that don't look at the world. Don't read the newspaper, even till today. Don't open up. Again, the Jerusalem Post. Again, thinking that these are simply political happenstances. What should your approach be? Why is this considered a religious message? Because he basically is trying to tell you that God is running the world. And the message that we're going to see today is not only is God running the world with regard to what's happening in Eretz Yisrael, but God is running the entire international scene, and somehow it all has to do with Am Yisrael. Now you're thinking to yourselves, these are very basic messages. We know this. We know that when there's a rebellion in Kurdistan, or when there's a financial crisis in North America, again, that of course God is running the scene. But again, an additional idea. It's not just that God is running the scene. It surrounds whom? Am Yisrael. There's a financial crisis in North America, according to Yeshayahu. Why? Because this has something to do with how the Jewish people are going to be affected. By the way, this is a little scary, if you think about it, because when you think of the financial crisis, whether you like it or not, again, strangely enough, what do we think of when we think of part of the financial crisis? Am I there? Everyone said? That's right? A little louder. Thank you. Madoff. Again, isn't that striking? Again, a little remarkable that somehow, I know, the Jewish people always have something to do, again, not only with the crises, but again, with the world scene at large. And therefore, Jewish communities across the globe were speaking, in fact. Again, the rabbis got up to speak about how the financial crisis is related to the spiritual nature of the Jewish people. And this idea, or this cue, is really taken from none other than Yeshayahu and the subsequent Nevi'im as well. Now, all the Nevi'im really have this philosophy, but you're going to see it expressed in a very, in very clear political, again, national, we'll talk about technical military terms, again, really first by Yeshayahu. So that's what we're going to continue with today. But again, the last point that I'd like to make is that as Yeshayahu is going to be talking then about the conquest, again, those that are going to be successful in stripping Am Yisrael of their autonomy. Again, according to Yeshayahu, why is this happening? Because this is what we're going to see as the introduction right now. This is happening because the people of Israel have sinned. So why does God allow for these nations to come in? Even the rebellions going on right now between Aram and Ashur, that's also God is punishing different nations. Aram deserves to be punished. Now Yeshayahu explains, why does Aram deserve to be punished? And why don't you have to worry about Aram? Because Aram is threatening Am Yisrael, and Aram has caused a lot of problems to Am Yisrael over the past 150 years. And therefore, Ashur is now going to come and destroy Aram. Why? Again, why does Aram deserve to be punished? Because Aram then threatened and hurt us. Why did Aram hurt us? Again, I hope you appreciate the cycle, because we sinned. So Aram came in. So who was Aram? Aram was really the vassal of God for the time being. And they came in and they punished Yisrael and Yehuda. Okay, but then because they punished us, they also deserve to be punished. So Ashur is going to come and punish Aram. And therefore Yeshayahu is going to consistently have to say, don't mess up God's plan. Right? Again, Emmanuel. God is really on our side. Again, Aram is threatening you. Don't worry, Ashur is going to destroy Aram. No, but that doesn't mean that you should now ally yourselves with Ashur. Let Hashem take care of this political scene, but just recognize that it really all does surround you. So if you're not going to listen to God right now, what will happen? What did we see in Parakhet? Ashur is going to come and they will affect you. They will destroy you, but don't worry, because through the cycle of things, what will eventually happen if Ashur comes and is going to hurt you because you've been a sinful people? Not to worry, because their iniquities are also going to be accounted for, because then God is going to come and punish them. Everyone appreciate this? Because we're going to see the cycle over and over again. But today, what we're going to focus on is, in fact, what's going on right now up north. Again, what's going on in terms of the Aram and Yisrael alliance. We're going to see that from Perek Tet, Pasuk Zayin, the focus is now going to be on what's going on. But wait a second, this goes back again to four Nevuot earlier, when Yeshayahu had told Ahaz, again, don't worry about Ritzin, don't worry about Pekach ben Remalia. Very soon, again, they're going to be destroyed. They may cause a little bit of harm. So now what we're going to see is really a new section where Yeshayahu is going to deliver messages not before the events happen, but apparently now as the events are happening. So if you remember, as we discussed last week, today are going to be the last of the Nevuot that Yeshayahu delivers during the time of Ahaz. It's already too late in the sense that he hasn't heeded Yeshayahu's message. Ahaz has not listened to Yeshayahu with regard to don't worry about the north, don't worry about this alliance between Aram and Yisrael. And so now Yeshayahu wants to tell them how things are going to play out. At the same time, the continuous comfort that's going to be addressed to the people, namely, don't worry, again, this generation, if you heed the messages, even though you've already started making alliances with Ashur, don't worry, because if you recognize that this was the wrong thing, then the next generation already will be positive. What's the next generation? Chizkiyahu's time. And we're going to be very, very sensitive from Perek Chaf Dalet and on to see whether or not Chizkiyahu's time really lives up to all these Nevuot Nechama of Yeshayahu. Esther. Does this philosophy still function today? Yes. Meaning Yeshayahu is giving you a message. So what are we still supposed to believe? Very nice. Yes. What are we still supposed to believe? Esther's asking an excellent question. Without Nevi'im, anytime any natural or political event / disaster occurs in the world, what is your religious responsibility? And I recognize, number one, that it's God's plan, that God is not just the God of Am Yisrael, but the God of the entire world. Again, that's stage number one, that God is also the God of history. Anna, what's your second response? It has something to do with us. Now, this is always the harder challenge. What does a tsunami have to do with us? Don't know, right? Now, if there were Nevi'im, then Rivka would be much easier, because then the Navi would tell us what the tsunami has to do with us. As far as we know, what are the different possibilities? Maybe the tsunami is punishing people who once punished us, right? That's a theme that you see throughout. Or maybe we're supposed to respond to a tsunami. How perhaps are we supposed to respond to a tsunami? Develop greater sensitivity to the world, to the inhabitants of the world, recognize our vulnerabilities. Whatever the case is, it's not just a message to the world. It has something to do with Am Yisrael. So that's exactly it. So everyone comes out with something else. Again, are they right? Is their methodology a correct one? When a rabbi gets up in shul, Anna tries to somehow link political events with what's going on within the community on a religious level. Where did he learn that from? Thank you. He learned that from Nevi'im. At the same time, do we know if his explanation is the correct one? No, why not? Because he's not a Navi. That's exactly it. Even though Chazal tell us, Chacham Adif Mi Navi, that a wise person really has an advantage over a Navi in the sense that he is going to take everything that's going on around into account, meaning he's not just going to think of the message of God. He really is going to incorporate every, I hope, you know, be sensitive to current events, be sensitive to the situation within the Jewish community and beyond. And that's what a rabbi should hopefully do. Now, is the rabbi wrong when he surmises what perhaps is the link to the Jewish community? Not necessarily. Meaning every community has a responsibility to try to internalize the message. He may not be right, but anytime we undergo some type of introspection, you're going to be the better off for it, believe me. Meaning, I don't know if that's really why it happened, but it doesn't hurt to work on ourselves. And we hope one day for the restoration of Nevuah, so that in fact we will know the link between the events and our right, that's what I meant by the introspection. A cheshbon nefesh, everyone must perform the cheshbon. Are you going to come out worse after perform? No. Again, was the rabbi necessarily right in the link between the events and your activity? Maybe not, but it didn't hurt. You became a better person as a result. That's wonderful. You did a great job. Thank you. Now, this is dangerous. When people say, this is why it happened, meaning I am sure that this is why it happened, no. Again, you're not a Navi. You can say, I think we should really undergo introspection. Again, I was just reading an article of Rabbi Lamb from 1954. And that's right. This was before I was born. And apparently there was a crisis that went on in the community. And what he does is he takes responsibility for it, similar to Moshe Rabbeinu. He reads based on the Slonim Rav's explanation of Moshe Rabbeinu when he comes in next week's Parsha, after things got worse in this week's Parsha, and he comes to God and he says, Lama hari ota la'am hazeh. You didn't make things better for them. Rather, you made it worse. Lama ze shlachtani. So why did you send me? And Rabbi Lamb understands that based on this reading that Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, I was a failure. Meaning, if things are worse for the community, then it must be that I'm not doing a good job. And he beautifully says, I don't even know what the crisis is that's hitting the community. Anyone know? 1954, Jewish community, Upper West Side? Okay, thank you. And again, apparently there was someone who, again, committed some type of atrocity, and he says, and I probably could have stopped it earlier on, and I didn't, and therefore I'm bearing responsibility for this, but we all have to recognize that, again, we all have to come out bearing more responsibility for our own actions and how we influence the community. And I was thinking to myself, that's a true leader, meaning a rav has to be able to say, I don't know. Again, at times even to say, maybe I didn't do, again, a sufficient job. Again, we're going to see that he takes his cue from Nevi'im also. Nevi'im who are going to say similar ideas, primarily Yirmiyahu later on. But again, even Yeshayahu, to be able to bear responsibility, right? And therefore, he sees himself as the one who is responsible for whatever national concerns, whatever national decisions are going to be made. He is really the religious / national advisor to the king, and he is going to bear responsibility, encouraging the people at the same time. So with this, we're going to continue. Very nice. So notice, I'm glad that you're mentioning this, the idea between the conflict in terms of, again, if we're really playing a role within this political spectrum, then on one hand, what really is going to be the, I would say, even the tension here between sitting back and observing what's going on and being active. So what do you see from Yeshayahu? Again, you see it even before Yeshayahu, but what do you clearly see with regard to Yeshayahu? Are you supposed to sit passively when all this is happening? I mean, even if you're supposed to take a neutral stance in the Ritzin Melech Aram and Pekach Ben Remaliah alliance, again, even if you're supposed to take a neutral stance, what does Yeshayahu want Achaz to do? But so sit still. Don't sit still. What should you do? Recognize that Emmanuel, meaning do something, turn to God more. Because is there going to be some level of disaster? Are they going to come in? And they're going, yes. Again, the degree is going to be based on you, based on your actions. How much do you believe in God? And therefore, we definitely see every step along the way. We saw the compilation of, if you remember, 8 different sections of the Nevuot, and the 9th one at the end, the beginning of Perek Ted, wherein he basically is talking to Ahaz every step along the way, not only so that he'll be cognizant of the relationship between what's going on politically and religiously, but that he'll be able to respond in kind. And I think, once again, if we turn to Parshat Shemot, what do you see? That there are two ways of responding during a time of crisis. You can either sit back, like Am Yisrael, who did what? What did they do in Perek Bet? Again, Vatalu, Zakatam, Shavatam. Again, they sighed and they cried. And God heard their sighs and cries, but God didn't do anything until when? Apparently, they were sighing and crying from Perek Aleph. What happens between Perek Aleph and Perek Bet? You have people like the midwives. You have people like Moshe Rabbeinu. You have people like the family of Moshe Rabbeinu. You have people like Yitro, who are going to get up and do something. And basically, the theme in general of Tanakh, and you see this in Yeshayahu, is do not sit passively. We are not a passive people. We are not a people who simply cry. Again, we do something about it. Anna, this is really the idea, according to Yeshayahu, of instead of just sitting back and observing history, you can actually, and now I'm going to quote Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, the chief rabbi of England, who says beautifully, can either sit passively and read history, again, God-written history, or you can write history together with God. And it's so clear, especially here in Yeshayahu. Again, I think throughout the Chumash it's clear, but when Nevi'im are there to tell you, get up, do something. Again, you right now have a choice in front of you. Again, you can either, and he mentions, you can either ally yourself, and I understand that politically that makes a lot of sense, but no, that's undermining belief in God. So don't do it. He wants him to respond actively and consciously at every state along the way, and therefore we as people, even without Nevi'im, what do we know? Are we supposed to be responding to current events in a very passive manner? No, we should be going to all the demonstrations. We should be going to Shteiman Fridays. We should, okay, there. I'm not going to become too political. And here we go. Let's take a look and see now, as Yeshayahu continues, we're going to see that he's going to, as we said, chart the events as they're happening now, giving us a sense that not only is Ahaz observing this, but obviously the entire community. And now we want to see, again, of what he's going to be, what his messages are as the events are occurring. So we're going to begin now in Perek Tet Pasuk Zayin, exactly where we left off. And now we're going to see that his, interestingly, his audience that he seems to be addressing, and this is an interesting phenomenon that we don't only find here, but it's also going to serve as an introduction to Masa HaAmim, is going to be, who is his audience? Let's just begin together, and I'd like you to tell me who you think he's speaking to. I know, I'm really trying to slow down. This is just very exciting. Okay, but I am going to slow down. Here we go. Let's read the psukim together. Davar, Shalach Adonai B'Yakov V'Nafal B'Yisrael. And even the terminology seems to imply that this is a new speech, right? He ended the last one, if you remember, the last pasuk that we read in pasuk vav, kinat Hashem tva'ot ha'sezot. He began the section way back in perek vav with kinah. He ends it with kinah. The term of devar shalach Adonai, as if it's a new idea, a new message, seems to imply this is a new speech and, in fact, a new theme. Again, Hashem has sent out a word, Be Yaakov, against Yaakov, v'nafal be Yisrael, and it fell upon Yisrael. When I first read it, Yaakov, Yisrael, this can refer to whom? You have to remember that he is a Navi for Ahaz, the king of Yehuda. Nonetheless, Yisrael is a general term used for all of Am Yisrael, the whole people, very nice. But now, v'yadu ha'am kulo, Ephraim v'yoshev Shomron, b'ga'ava uv'goda levav, lemor, Levenim nafalu vigazit nivne shekmim gudau varazim nachlif. Vayisagev Hashem etzarei ritzin alav vet oivav yisachsech. Notice then, in Pasuk Chet, gen viyadu ha'am kulo, the whole nation will know Ephraim v'yoshev Shomron. Specifically whom? Ephraim v'yoshev Shomron. So really, who is he talking either to or about? The northern kingdom. Now, this is a little strange, because you remember in our introduction, we noted that there are 4 Nevi'im. There are 4 prophets who are living more or less during this time, because they all share the same Ketovet Nevuit, the same introduction, that in they are all living during the time of the kings of Yehuda, of the positive kings of Uziel, and Yotam, Ahaz, and Chizkiyahu, and the king of Yisrael during the time, if you recall, by all of them, again, is Yeravam ben Yoash, also known as Yeravam Hasheni, the last of the kings in the dynasty of Yehu, who, for all intents and purposes, is really going to be the last of the strong kings of Yisrael. Keep this in mind, because for the next 40 years or so, there are coup d'etats all the time, a very unstable Shomroni government. Now, if you remember, we only saw who the king of Yisrael was, specifically by the prophets who are going to deliver messages to Yisrael. Who were these prophets? Hosea and Amos. Very nice. They have this ketovet. In addition, as we said, always the kings of Judea, the kings of Yehuda, are going to be mentioned. By whom do you find the kings of Yehuda mentioned? Obviously, Yeshayahu and Micha. Micha HaMorashti. And we try to even see, again, who came first. It seems that Hosea is the oldest. Yeshayahu and Amos seem to be more or less contemporaries. Micha is clearly younger. He's relating already to the Sancheiriv, not to the Tigla Plaser HaShlishi. This is the map of invasion of, really, the rise of the Assyrian Empire, we said, in about 745, after Yeravam ben Yoash takes over in 778. So again, in the middle, basically, or towards the end of his kingdom, Ashur is already on the rise. We have the initial invasions here of the north in 745. When is the major attack of Sancheiriv, the general of the Assyrian army? That's not going to be until 705. So what's interesting is that Micha isn't going to be until 705. He's probably a student of Yeshayahu. Definitely, again, towards the end of that generation. Nonetheless, he's going to share this ketovet. Why am I reviewing this introduction? Because this is a little strange. Yeshayahu here seems to be speaking to whom? Wait a second, we don't need him. No offense. Because who do we have speaking to Israel at this time? Hosea and Amos. And what are they talking about? They're talking about the same thing. They're talking about the destruction. They're really saying the same thing. And therefore, what do we have to ask ourselves? Is Yeshayahu really speaking to them? Could it be that he's speaking to them? Yes, maybe he has a different style. Remember we said, Ein Navi mit Navi boto sugnon. Everyone has their own style. So maybe Yeshayahu's style is somewhat different than Hosea and Amos, even though we're going to prove today that no, Yeshayahu and Amos are actually very similar, and we're going to see just why. And therefore, one has to second guess, why is he saying this? Maybe because he is the Navi HaMelech for the king of Yehuda. Maybe he has, I don't know, a certain prestige about him that is going to impact upon the people of the north. Unless we say, no, he's not talking to the people of the north, rather, thank you. And that's what it really seems to be saying over here. Who is he delivering this to? As if he's talking to the north, but who is he really speaking to? He's really speaking to Yehuda. In particular, if you recall, the king, again, the officers, the government, the aristocracy of Yehuda, telling them what's going on now and why it's going on in the north. Again, this is not pre the invasion. Now he's talking as the invasion. Again, as Aram and Yisrael. Again, as we're going to see right now, as they're going to be attacked. Let's take a look and see exactly what's going on there. What does he say? The people are noting, specifically the people of Ephraim, which is always the beloved terminology that's employed to refer to the people of the Shomron. And then he says, and the people of the Shomron, they're saying, again, Bega'ava uvegolda levav. They're saying in arrogance, they're saying in haughtiness, Livenim nafalu, it's true, bricks have fallen, Vigazit nivne, don't worry, we're going to rebuild our broken brick homes, it sounds like the three little pigs, we're going to build it now with gazit. Gazit, as you know, is a hewn stone, it's a much more precious stone that's specifically found in the northern parts of Eretz Yisrael. Again, Shikmim gudo, they may have cut down our sycamore trees, which we know also, where is the Shikmah found? Really only in the north. Again, the strong trees of the north. V'arazim nachlif. Again, what's stronger than the Shikmah, than the sycamore? The arazim, the cedars of Lebanon. So don't worry. Again, we're going to get up now, and we're going to build even stronger fields. What are they, even stronger fortresses, stronger homes. What are they talking about? What's happened? And what has happened in between? Tigla pleser hashlishi. The Assyrian and armies have already come, and they are punishing the Israelite kingdom, the Shomronim, for their alliance with Aram. Right? Remember, Aram is rebelling against Ashur. Aram is going to ally themselves now with Yisrael, or Yisrael allies themselves with Aram against Ashur. Ashur is now coming in. So what's happened? This isn't a pre-warning. This is now post that Yeshayahu is telling Ahaz. So do you see what happened? Again, the people of the north, again, how did their alliance? Was there any reason for you to be afraid of their alliance of Aram and Yisrael? No. Why not? Because Ashur is taking care of everything on their own. What else is he berating? Perhaps Ahasuerus. So you shouldn't have really made an alliance with Ashur. Why not? But things just take care of themselves, meaning you should have trusted in God. Now, Ashur, it's true that you have an alliance with him, but look, you know, they're not really going to care. They're already coming into the north and destroying them. And in Ga'ava, in haughtiness, what are the people of the north saying? The invasion of Tiglath-Pileser right now in 745? No, this is just a political happenstance. We're going to be just fine. You know what ends up happening by 705? Within the next 40 years, that's nothing, right? One generation in Tanakh, what's going to happen? The entire Shomroni kingdom is going to be exiled. Basically, by 687, that's it. Again, they're all going to be gone. Let's take a look now. So Yeshayahu is saying, they are so haughty. They are now suffering the invasion of the Assyrians, and they think that this is just temporary. The Assyrians are going to leave, and what will happen? They'll rebuild everything. So again, the Lord is going to let the enemies of Ritzin, Alav, who are the enemies of Ritzin Melech Aram, and Ritzin Melech Aram was allying themselves with Yisrael against Ashur. So here, again, don't worry, because God is going to, again, what does Yeshayahu say? Ashur is going to win, v'toivav yisachsech, again, stirring up its foes, Aram mikedem uflishtim miachor v'yachlu et Yisrael b'chol peh. Aram is going to come in from the east, and the plishtim from the west, and because Yisrael is going to be so weak, they're going to, basically, who devoured Yisrael with the greedy mouths, again, b'chol zot lo shava po v'od yado nituya. Even after this happens and the people think, okay, that's it, now things are going to be fine. What does the Nevi tell you? Are things going to be fine? No. B'chol zot lo shava po. Even after there's going to be the initial invasion of the Assyrians, the initial destruction of the northern kingdom, God is still going to be angry. Now, please remember this phrase, b'chol zot lo shava po. An interesting phrase. Nonetheless, again, or yet, his anger still is not going to be returned, meaning this isn't going to compensate for the wrath of God. And va'od yado nituya, God's hand, his very strong hand, the hand that he uses to punish sometimes our enemies, is now outstretched to punish Yisrael. Va'am lo shav ad hamakehu v'tashem tzva'ot lo darashu. You would think that what should the people do after the initial blow to them, they should do tshuva. And yeah, what does Yeshayahu say? No. Again, they are so haughty, they're convinced that everything is going to be just fine. So they haven't returned to Hashem who struck them. Again, they haven't sought Hashem out. So now, next stage, Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayachret Hashem Yisrael, Rosh v'zanav, kipah v'agmon yom achad. So now, things are going to get worse. Originally, we find that some of their villages were destroyed, and they're convinced that they're going to rebuild them. Hashem says, okay, now it's time for me to cut you off. They're going to be massacres. Again, head and tail, palm branch and reed in a single day. Right? Major pogroms. Zaken unesofanim hu harosh, v'navi moresh sheker hu hazanav. Who are going to be the ones who are going to be cut off, as he said, the heads and the tails? Well, here we go. Who are the heads? Zaken unesofanim. All of the officers. Again, these are the heads who are leading the people astray, together with the navi moresh sheker, neviyei sheker. That we find already during the time of Achav of the north, you have in Samaria, although you don't really have such a proliferation, not for the next 100 years or so, in the southern area. Who has anav? So you have the political heads and the religious heads who are leading the people astray. Pasuk 15, by whom oshrei ha'am hazem matim. And now, as we see, he's going to continue. The people's leaders have been misleaders. By the way, you should already know this, that Yeshayahu is extremely poetic and is going to incorporate numerous plays on words. What is Mo'oshrei Ha'am? Literally, the Osher, right, with an Aleph. The happy ones, right, the aristocracy. And yet, what is he playing off of? He's going to use a lot of Aleph Shin Reish to also hint to the fact that Ashur, you can't get Ashur out of the picture over here. Again, those who are the leaders here, they have been misleaders. Umu'usharav mevulaim. And in fact, these same people have been very confused. Why? Because they think things are going to be fine, but they're the ones leading the people astray, and they're going to be cut off. Al-kein, al-bachurav lo yismach Adonai, vet-yitomah vet-almanotav lo yirachim, kichula chanef umerea v'chol peh dvar nivala, v'chol zot lo shavapo v'od yado nituya. And therefore, what is God going to do? Basically, leave the people with a lot of widows and a lot of orphans. What does it mean? The men are going to be killed off. We don't know, by the way, are they going to be killed off in war? Are they going to be killed off, I don't know, in death and disease? Are they going to be killed? Don't know, but we do know that Hashem isn't going to spare youths. He's not going to show compassion for the orphans or widows. They're going to be left alone. Again, things are going to be very ugly. Things are just going to turn very bad. Again, and already, then everything has gone off, meaning the Hashem has let off his word over here. Again, this, here it also means that the people are just saying their evil words. And even after this, is God's wrath going to be compensated for? No, God is still going to be angry. Oh no, this isn't the end of it. Now you have to remember, if Yeshayahu is in fact speaking to Ahaz, what does he want to tell him? Very nice, meaning this is what's going on right now. And again, we're going to see, remember I told you that Usher is going to come in and take care of them. Right, and therefore not to be afraid of them. Look, now why is this all happening to them? What does Yeshayahu have to explain? In the previous section, we received a very interesting political message. Now, what does he want to explain? Why is this happening to the people of the north? It's not just that they're unsuccessful because they have an alliance with Aram and that Asher is going to come in. Why is this happening? Because of their own gava, their own haughtiness, and their lack of shuva. Obviously, what hint is he trying to deliver to Ahaz? Unfortunately, things are going to happen to you. You don't want it to get this bad. What should you do? Tshuva. Now, we're going to see that it's almost as if it goes in one ear and out the other ear of Ahaz. You don't know that yet, I'm telling you. But, again, the next generation, when they suffer, we're going to see exactly at what stage they're finally going to do tshuva. It may not be right away, but we're going to see that they will heed the message. Elizabeth. Thank you. Meaning, you have to remember that Amos and Yeshayahu are both considered Nevi'ei HaMelech, which means that their nevuot are publicized. You know, they're the ones whose speeches, yes, because they're delivering them in a public forum on a national level. Meaning, when God tells them, go and deliver these nevuot, they're meant to deliver them either to the king himself or to the aristocracy, meaning in a public forum. Most Nevi'im deliver more parochially oriented nevuot, right? They're not necessarily delivering it on a national level. Very nice. Beautiful. Meaning, how are the masses going to hear this? It's covered in the Jerusalem Times. Right? Meaning, I'm saying in the sense that people that, you have to remember, I don't want to say was their major form of entertainment, but okay, was their major form of entertainment and social commentary and shiurim. You know how you look in the back of the newspaper and it says what's going on during the week, you know, in Merkaz Van Lee or in Beit Avichai, this is what's going on. Again, this would have been like your major event. Yeshayahu is speaking at 2 p.m. in Ir David. Again, whoever would like to come. Now, obviously, when he speaks, he already has an audience, and that is the government officials who are there. Right? But are they going to, again, they'll spread it, again, by word of mouth. Everything is going to be word of mouth. Very nice. Beautiful. So excellent. We're going to see that during this time, is Ahaz listening? Meaning, is he receptive to the words of Yeshayahu? He listens. That's right. He's going to make bad decisions, as we're going to see, or he chooses. Again, when Yeshayahu presents him with the choices, he seems to consistently again make the wrong ones, but he definitely is giving Yeshayahu the respect. He definitely is listening. He's just very torn, as we said. He's choosing the political, purely the political side, right? Without any religious side. Again, there's definitely is a political side. I hope you don't mind me sharing this with you, but I was thinking about this the other day when it said that, again, who got involved? The German emissaries got involved? Again, when with the last request of the officials from Gaza for Shalit's release, right? And Netanyahu said, that's it. Like, they're asking for too much and no more. And I was thinking from a political side, he's right, meaning politically he's correct. And yet, again, why do we all respond a little differently? Again, I would say Shalit is a very good example of this, right, in the sense that religiously, and again, we know that Pidyon Shvuyim, and it comes before anything else, and also our emotional side, meaning there really are other dimensions to things. And Ahaz, if we were looking at this, and that's why I say we have to try to put ourselves back in Yeshayahu's time period. Again, if you were Ahaz and you were sitting on the government and you know that there is an alliance coming in from the north to attack you, what really is the best political move? Ally yourselves with the closest democracy. I know, now I'm playing off. Okay, ally yourselves with Ashur. Right, again, that makes a lot of sense. Yeshayahu says it does make sense, but No, again, God doesn't want that. You should be relying on God. Take a neutral stance. And I can't help it. I'm really trying. I'm trying. I keep thinking, like, this would be, if only Netanyahu would read Yeshayahu. I'm serious, meaning today I really think that we're in a very similar time period, and only just take a neutral stance. What do I mean by a neutral stance? Forget about the U.S. of A. And, again, forget about peace talks and just Emmanuel. That's exactly it. By the way, are we going to suffer a little? I'm sure. Are there going to be some more terrorist attacks if we don't sit down to the negotiating table with the Palestinians? I am sure. Thank you. That's really it. Okay, but there. I didn't even say it. But, again, for the long term, that's what Yeshayahu was trying to tell him. The long term. What's the long term in Yeshayahu terminology? Acharit hayamim. The long term is the next generation. You're going to suffer. He said that no matter what, you're going to suffer. The question is, how much do you want to suffer? And how long do you want to suffer for? And really, the next generation has an opportunity if you would only make the right decisions now. So he's trying to prove it by saying, so look at what's going on right now. And Ephraim isn't getting the message. They're convinced that everything's going to be okay. What's he afraid of? He's afraid that Ahaz is going to adopt a similar stance, and say that, okay, when this is going to happen to us, okay, we're going to be fine. No, do you see? They're so silly. They should be doing tshuva. Now, it's so much easier to look at a situation objectively when you're the outsiders. Right? So basically, he's saying, look at what's going on. Look what's going on in the north. Please take heed. Don't you realize that they should be doing tshuva? And notice that it's one stage after the other. Right? We already find that now for the second time. B'chozot lo shava po va'od yadov netuya. Pasuk yudayin. Ki va'ara ka'esh rish'a. Shamir of Shayatochel, Vititat Pisivchei Hayar, Vayetabchu Geut Ashan. Yet his anger has not turned back, and his arm is still outstretched, as we've seen. And again, now it's going to get even worse, right? He is going to, as we see here, smoke, let everything smoke up over here. Be'evrat Hashem Tvaot, Neatam Aret, Vihi Ha'am Kemacholet Ish, Ishalachiv Lo Yachmolu. Now, the next stage, again, God is really still very angry. The earth is shaken. The people themselves are going to be a devouring people. They're going to be like devouring fire. What does that mean? Beyond just those who are invading, killing off the inhabitants of the north, they're going to start killing off each other. Again, in other words, civil war. When does civil war begin? Why is civil war going to be the next stage? They're not happy with what's going on, meaning half the people are going to say, what should we do? With whom now? Again, with anybody. That's exactly it. Let's stick with our alliance with Aram. Or others are going to say, maybe it's time to do tshuva. Maybe, again, we should fight on our own, give up with an alliance Aram. Maybe we should surrender to Ashur. You see, again, when things go wrong, then there's going to be a tremendous amount of civil disunity, and now the people are going to be killing each other. This isn't good. By the way, you know that this happens in almost every generation, right? The Baitusim, again, and the Prushim, versus the Tzedukim, again, in the Baitutim during Tkufat Bayecheni. Okay, we're not going to get into all this now. So they're going to be killing each other. Isha lachiv lo yachmalu. They're not going to have mercy on their own countrymen. Vayigzar al yamin v'ra'iv. V'yochal al smol v'lo saveu. Ish besar zero yochelu. And they're going to be doing a lot of killing over here. They're going to snatch on to the right, meaning they're going to kill someone on the right, but they're still going to be hungry, meaning they don't know how to deal with this. They're just going to be killing all the people around. They're going to kill the person on the left, and they're still not going to be satiated. Everyone is going to be killing one another. Of the north, yes, very sad. Yes, Menashe to Ephraim, Ephraim it's Menashe. Can why specifically use Ephraim and Menashe? The two brothers are killing each other, and that's right, meaning in your senses of Ephraim and Menashe, they're viewed as one Shevet, they're Yosef. They don't turn against each other. No, Menashe's going to turn against Ephraim against Menashe. But it also works out very nicely here because Ephraim is also the nickname for the entire north, meaning they're all turning against each other. And also Ephraim and Menashe, they do happen to be the two most dominant and largest tribes of the north. And they're going to turn against one another, Yachdav Hema al Yehuda. And then what are they going to decide to do? When is the only possibility of unity? When you unite against a common enemy. That's when they're going to decide, how are we going to deal with this? We're going to go and fight against Yehuda, meaning your own people. Ephraim is turning against Menashe, and then they're going to turn against you, meaning what decision, obviously, have they made? They're maintaining their alliance with Aram, which means to now go and try to get Yehuda in on it. By the way, what do we know? Again, that's one of the possibilities, to ally ourselves with Aram. And and Yisrael against Ashur. Yeshayahu said, don't do that, but also, and that's a bad alliance, but also what should you not do? Also don't ally yourselves with Ashur. So far we've had three phrases. You're still not going to do it, not going to do tshuva. So now let's see what happens. Hoi! Hachokikim chokikei aven umechatzvim amal kitevu. Hoi is literally, oi. Again, that's right, meaning, because you didn't do tshuva once, twice, three times, what happens? Three strikes and you're out. Again, that's it. Take a look at now what's going to happen. Oh, no! Those who write down things for posterity, again, umechatvim amal kitevu, and they're the ones who compose documents of amal. Gena, which basically means a person's misdemeanors, right? Who does this generally? Who writes down a person's misdemeanors for posterity? The courtroom. Very nice. Beautiful. So all the judges, lahatot midin dalim, vilegzol mishpat aniyei ami, who, again, who write this, and who are the ones who also subvert the poor and rob the rights of the needy, liyot almanot shlalam, and basically take advantage of the widows as well, vet yitomim yavozu, and they mock all the orphans, umatasu liyom pkuda. What are you going to do on the day of punishment? Basically, all of you corrupt people. Ulishoah mimerchak tavo. When such terrible troubles come from away. Almi tanusu lezra. Who are you going to go to for help? Va'anatazvu kvotchem. And then what's going to happen to you? Bilti chara tachat asir v'tachat harugim yipolu. Gena, then you're just going to collapse one on top of the other. Again, bilti tachat asir, one prisoner. Again, giving you a sense that they're going to be, again, that these are people who deserve, again, all the wrongdoings, v'tachat harugim yipolo, from falling beneath those that have already been slain, v'chozot lo shav apo v'od yado nituya. You would think that when this last stage comes, basically, Hashem saying, I'm just going to wipe out, again, anyone who sinned, you would think that people would wake up and, no. So that's exactly it. They're not going to do tshuva, v'chozot lo shav apo. Okay, now what's the idea of a bechozot lo shavapo? That Hashem, again, Hashem's anger still, then has not been compensated for, has not been assuaged. Why? Because the people aren't doing tshuva. Meaning Hashem is doing this in order to encourage them, again, not necessarily to completely cancel the punishment, but to at least alleviate it. But why is it getting worse from one stage to the next? How does three stages of this lead to, hi, I'm just going to wipe you out? Because God is still angry. Why is God still angry? Because you haven't done tshuva. Now, what we're going to see is something phenomenal today, and that is that we're familiar with this type of methodology, and we're going to see something very interesting. Oh. 100%. One stage leading to the other, Shoah, which is also in Stefania. That's right. Very nice. Or not nice. That's right. Again, this is the smoke and people under corpses. Again, this imagery of falling under a dead body, meaning I don't think, meaning unfortunately we have pictures. That's right. Yes. And you would think, now again, that's why I'm glad we're not Nevi'im. Right, in that regard, because here Yeshayahu is explaining something, you didn't do tshuva. Again, we're religious leaders. And once the calamity started, we know that unfortunately there were insufficient leaders before who said, okay, who saw everything coming and said, get out. But once, again, the Nuremberg laws, and once you have the original, again, SS sending off to war camps, right, then did religious leaders wake up and people forget about leaving. They say, okay, you know, work on ourselves and there were, and we have two votes, and we have letters, and yet we know that it all happens between 38 and 45, and very, very quickly. That's right. Very nice. And that's a true religious leader for you, right? Someone who's going to stick it out. Correct. Here, by the way, who's going to suffer? No, who's suffering? Who's portrayed as the innocent? The widows, meaning the widows and the orphans, they're suffering also, meaning they're losing their fathers and they're still being taken advantage of by the corrupt classes. So there definitely is a mass, I don't want to say destruction, mass punishment, mass hardship, mass terrorizing taking place over here. So that even though, by the way, historically, what ends up happening? All those who aren't killed off by Ashur when they initially come in, what's going to happen to them? They're sent to DP camps, right? Basically, they're all taken out. So even, and no one, meaning the Shomron are going to be the only one, or basically Kutim are going to come in, and the land is desolate of even these inhabitants. So it's not as if those who weren't killed, that they're getting off completely free. You're right, even the apparently innocent are suffering. Very nice. If you remember, I mentioned this at the very beginning, because Yeshayahu talks a lot about this Yad Metuyah. This is the outstretched hands of Hashem, generally associated also with the Yad Chazakah. Yad Chazakah, Zro Netuyah, same idea. Again, these metaphors are consistent. God strong. Thank you. Again, we find this over and over again. We would love for God's hand to be outstretched on the Egyptians, right? Like it is in the upcoming Parshiot. Rana, all our enemies. And sometimes, don't worry, God says, just wait. I'm going to end up punishing Ashur also. But for now, again, and sometimes, unfortunately, the Shoah is a good example. Sometimes the hand of God is outstretched against us. Here we take a look now, and I'd like you to see something, again, just fascinating. And as you know, we are learning Yeshayahu, but we're also learning Yeshayahu in order to get a greater glimpse as to the world of Nevuah in general. And it's interesting that this terminology or methodology of 1, 2, 3, 4 is one that we find actually consistent, number one, in general in counting, and I think that Israelis have preserved this, right? In Chutz La'aretz, we count 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out, right? Here it's really 1, 2, 3, and then you're out, right? Basically, shalosh, arba, vih, right? That's really, again, what we find here. Ya'ir Zakovich, right? One of the heads of the departments of Mikra in Hebrew University wrote his doctorate on this. Again, how? Oh, I'm not joking. That's right. Right, ana, shalosh, arba. That's right, meaning to see how this was generally the way that people counted, and that this is the way that people address others, right? Meaning, obviously, there were many other stages. He decides to count it this way, again, as three and then four, because this was how, basically, people spoke in an organized manner. Again, where else do we see this? And this is going to be in Amos. Very nice. He really is going to base his doctorate on Amos, where Amos mentions this in particular, again, in Perek Aleph. For those who have a Tanakh in front of them, if you don't, not to worry. Again, Amos begins with exactly this. Ko amar Hashem al shlusha pishe damasek v'al arba lo ashivenu. Again, and then al shlusha pishe aza v'al arba lo ashivenu. Al shlusha pishe tzor v'al arba lo ashivenu. There are three iniquities that, again, these respective countries have done towards Am Yisrael. The fourth one, I'm not going to forgive them for. By the fourth one, they're going to be destroyed. That's it. I can't take this. I can't tolerate it anymore. Again, what's interesting is that not only does Amos use it here with al shlosha pishe, al shlosha pishe, but later on, when he's speaking to the people of the north, in fact, he is going to incorporate this one more time. When he speaks in Perek Zayin begins, Ko Hirani Hashem. Again, Perek Zayin Pasuk Aleph, Ko Hirani Hashem. Hashem showed me this image of basically destruction in the form of locust. And then Pasuk Dalet, Ko Hirani Hashem. Hashem showed me destruction in the form of fire. Again, next, and each one it says that Amos intervenes and says, Hashem, again, please don't destroy them. Okay, Nicham Hashem Alzot. Hashem will forgive you for this one. Pasuk Zayin, Ko Hirani Hashem. A third Ko Hirani, Hashem is going to show Amos, a leveler, basically is going to level the city down to the ground. And that's when there's a small interruption of basically Amatzia, one of the people in the audience, says, that's too much. Stop it. You can't talk against the government this way. Then Hashem is going to destroy all these monarchical temples. Stop it. Go back to Yehuda. Please keep this in mind. And then sure enough, there's a last Koharani Hashem where there's a kluv kayetz. Again, a kluv is a basket. Again, that's meant to collect the harvest, basically to show that Hashem's going to pick off the last ones, and there's going to be total destruction. So in Amos, so far, twice we find, number one, the term literally of three and then four. Then we have three and then a fourth image, which is coming to depict stages of punishment. And then there's one more, where in Amos actually says as well, he says, in a Perek Dalid, he talks to the people. He actually begins by speaking to the women. And he is going to talk about the different stages of destruction. And sure enough, what does he tell them? Gana, each one. Gana, they're going to be caught. They're going to, Again, I am going to firstly send them agricultural diseases. Perek Dalid, Pasuk Ched ends, V'lo yisbo v'lo shafta madai nu'um Hashem. And what's going to happen? Two ways of reading it. V'lo shafta madai. What does that mean? Either, and you still haven't returned to me, says Hashem, meaning even after I send you the agricultural diseases, so now I have to send you something else, or the Navi is already saying, and you won't, meaning, v'lo shafta madai. I'm going to send you this one, but I know you too well. What's going to happen? You're not going to wake up. You're going to keep on sinning, and then I'm going to have to send you different, again, more. The first one is going to be drought. The second is going to be literal agricultural diseases. How does that one end? V'lo shafta madai num Hashem. You still aren't going to return to Hashem. Again, this idea of not returning to Hashem. Shafta madai num Hashem, again, mentioned three times. So we find, again, that really Yeshayahu and Amos, again, I hope you see this, not only in their numbers, but even in their themes, are really talking the same way. Right? Notice, Yeshayahu says, again, in this exact terminology, as we've seen, three times over, how does it end? B'chol zot lo shava po. What does that sound like? It sounds like, v'lo shavta madai nu'um Hashem. But what is it really reflecting? It's not reflecting just the initial stages of punishment, again, but also that Hashem is still angry. Not only that you haven't done tshuva, but Hashem is still angry, which is really representative of the Koharani, of the 3 + 4 different images of destruction that Amos was privy to. Does everyone see that? Now you're wondering, why am I, again, going off to Amos? Because please keep this in mind. Again, to help you understand a little bit about Nevuah, it's true that there are other Nevi'im that talk in 3s and 4s. As much as Amos and Yeshayahu? No. Gana, Amos is Mr. 3 and 4s. Everything is in 3s and 4s. And what do we already see by Yeshayahu? He's also doing a very good job with 3s and 4s. Again, it seems that there's a very similar style of Nevuah going on. Now, what can one argue? Well, yeah, they're contemporary. So this is the contemporary style, right? There are genres that are always a little more appropriate for that particular time period in history. So this was the way that it was taught. But maybe we can even date them a little better now. Again, as I told you, it's clear that Hosea is the oldest. And it's clear that Micha is the youngest. Can anyone tell me here, again, something interesting about Yeshayahu and Amos? Again, I want you to think for a moment. But what do we know that's interesting about both of them? Again, they're both living more or less during the same time period. And I can argue, what do you know? Yeshayahu is speaking to the people in the south about the people in the north. And Amos is actually speaking to the people in the north. So it seems as if the people in the north are hearing a lot of these 3 and 4s destructions. And one can argue, yes, that this was, again, a sophisticated way of speaking, an organized way of addressing the people. But now we find something truly phenomenal. As we said, it seems that Yeshayahu is not literally speaking to the people of the north. He's speaking to people of the south about the people of the north. Amos really is speaking to the people of the north, but where is Amos from? Amos is from Tekoa. Amos is from Yehuda, again, directly south of Yerushalayim. So what do I find by Yeshayahu and Amos? These are two southerners. That's right. These are two Yerushalayim Tekoa people, again, who have developed a similar style. That's right. And the strange thing is that Yeshayahu here, when he's talking about the north, is going to employ that style, just like Amos, when he went up to the north, he used that style. When Yeshayahu was speaking to, again, just about what's going on in Yehuda, did he use the style? No. And therefore, perhaps, one day I'm going to write an article about this, but again, because I haven't seen this yet. What? Sorry? After. That's very bad. I'm joking because I haven't seen this, but we know that everyone tries to figure out who's older, Yeshayahu and Amos. What has everyone been picking up on this? It seems that who's older? Amos. That Amos came first. Amos is very sophisticated as well. He's going to speak to the aristocracy. Amos is from, again, the area south of Yerushalayim. He is going to employ the 3 and 4 in the north, knowing that this is a sophisticated way of speaking. Al shlosha pishay, al shlosha pishay. Koharani, koharani. Velo shafta madai, velo shafta madai. And, again, who's he speaking to? He's speaking to the north about the imminent, again, destruction that they're going to suffer. When Yeshayahu speaks to the south about what's going on now in the north, what is he consciously doing? He's consciously adapting Amos' style Anna Amos is content to say, again, Anna, this is what's happening right now. He's playing off of Amos. Now, Yeshayahu is too creative to quote Amos, right? Meaning, and he's his own person. But at the same time, he's going to be using that style. How do I know, by the way, that Amos seems to be coming first? What does Amos talk about? First, there's going to be agricultural. First, there's going to be drought. Then there's going to be agricultural destruction. And then there's going to be enemy invasion. And ultimately, again, people are going to be killed. Here, where does Yeshayahu start? With the enemy, right? So it seems that the first stages have already happened, and therefore there are some who, even without this literary comparison, there are some who really do say, okay, so it's clear that Amos came before Yeshayahu, again, but not necessarily. Here, the proof seems to be not only in content, but in style. Why else would Yeshayahu, specifically when he's speaking about the north, all of a sudden adapt Amos' terminology? He wants people, by now, do people know Amos' Nevuot? By the way, do people in the south know Amos' Nevuot? Yes, again, he is from the south. He goes home and he probably writes down his nevuot, and everyone's so proud. Wow, Amos hails from Tekoa and Yehuda. And therefore, Yeshayahu is going to adapt that same style as if to say everything that Amos said, it really is coming true. And instead of using the terms of Koherani, I see a vision of the future, it's happening right now. Secondly, instead of saying, he's using that terminology, again hinting to the fact that Hashem is now not forgiving the people of Yisrael for what they're doing. And lastly, instead of saying that they haven't yet done tshuva, what's the term? That Hashem is still angry. Forget it. Right? The tshuva isn't going to help here, again, that much in terms of canceling or negating these punishments. It could help in alleviating it, but you should just know that now it's a later stage. That last time it was v'lo shavta madai nom Hashem, this time it's v'lo shav apo. That God is still angry. The messages are from Hashem. The messages are from Hashem, and yet? Correct. They use their own style. They get to decide how to say it. Very nice. So what could Hashem say? What was the message of God, basically, to Yeshayahu? Very nice. And divide it into however many they want. And say it however they want. Use different phrases each time or have a refrain that is very reminiscent of the refrains of Amos. Yehuda's number 7. Very nice. Meaning 3 and 4. 4 is the final, and therefore 8 is also the final. Meaning there are always cycles over there. They're very nice. Thank you. And again, what's your name? So what Yael, I think, is also saying is when Yeshayahu says 3, again, what should they already know? Because they've heard Amos, and it seems that what Yair Zakovich writes is that this is how they think. They think in 3s and 4s, and consequently in, not 6 and 7, but 7 and the end of the 4, the 8th. Right? So because they think this way, what is Yeshayahu? He's not just building off of Amos, he's getting them to say, even before he gets to the 4th one, before he gets to Hai, he wants them to anticipate Hai. Right? The Hoy shouldn't surprise them. They know almost that this is what's coming. That's right. So what's interesting, I'm glad you're bringing this up, maybe they learned by the same teacher. Isn't that a nice proposal? It's a brilliant proposal. However, the same Navi school. Exactly. Now, who's Yeshayahu's Navi school? His father, Yeshayahu ben Amoz. And he lives in Yerushalayim. And he, as we said, sees all the intense revelations of God. Amoz is from Tekoa. Now, I can still say from Tekoa. Could you go to a Navi training school on Har HaBayit? Yeah, sure. Again, really not far at all. Again, just go through the Nachal. You end up right by Herodian. Take the Kfish Okay if you're by Har Choma. Again, very easy. However, what do we know about Amoz and Perek Zayin? First, when Amos is he introduced with the father's name? No, so now we're even more excited because he didn't learn by his father. He learned by Yeshayahu's father. However, again, Amos in Perek Zayin says that when Amatziah, in the middle of these three and four Koharanis, Amatziah, a Kohen from Betel, tells him, don't talk anymore. Again, we don't want to hear anymore. Almost as if to say, don't get to number four. Right? And he says, Lech brach lecha al Eretz Yehuda ve'chol sham lechem. Go back to Eretz Yehuda and there eat lechem. Again, here, by the way, we learn that a Navi HaMelech, how is he provided for? He's provided for by the king. What is Amatziah trying to tell him? We are not taking care of you. We do not want you here. You're not going to be on our payroll. Go back home. Go back to Yehuda. You're a native Judean. That's where you belong. And then what's Amos' response? He tells him, Lo Navi Anochi, Velo Ben Navi Anochi. You think I want to be here and be a Navi? And he's also trying to tell him, I don't need to be on the payroll because I am a rancher, not just a shepherd that we find from the beginning of Amos. I'm a, what's a boker? A cowboy, right? I have estates. Again, I don't need to be supported by anyone. I am pretty wealthy to begin with, right? That's, in fact, how most of Chazal, other than the Abarbanel, who comes later, who thinks that Amos is actually quite poor, but again, most say Amos is very, very wealthy. Uboles shikmim. He also mentions the shikma, the sycamore. Again, boles shikmim, and I have orchards. Now, what's interesting is that the shikma is not indigenous to the south. It's only in the north, right? So maybe he got confused, right? Rashi says he was amus bidvarav. He didn't know what to say. He was caught off guard, so he used something from the reality of the north, or it's metaphoric, right? Boles shikmim. What grows on a sycamore? Nuts. Right, and therefore he means I try to get through people's hard shells, right, in order to really to talk to them. So these are different ideas, but what's interesting? Or maybe now. Maybe now he has orchard. Very nice, he has property up north. Yes, that could be very nice. And what then is his idea? Lo Navi Anochi velo ben Navi Anochi. Again, I'm not a Navi and I'm not the son of a Navi. So now you're saying, he supports all the more that he, but he says, no, like the only reason I'm here is because one day God took me Macharei Hatzon and he made me a Navi, giving us the impression, did he ever apply to Navi training school? No. That he, perhaps even living, have you been to Tekoa, to Nachal Tekoa? Yes, excellent. Again, don't you want to live there? Again, just out in the middle of nowhere, philosophizing all day. Again, you already live in the middle of nowhere? Oh, okay, that's right. Okay, very nice. You're at the northern part of Midbar Yehuda, Yefrem Od. And that's right, in the middle of nowhere, in fact, where he can naturally apparently develop that personality and the characteristics of a Navi. So that's a nice proposal. However, what does that teach you? Do you think Yeshayahu knows Amos' Nevuot? Oh, yes. Does he like them?
Yes.
Amos is very creative and very organized and very terrifying. And again, it could be that Yeshayahu, and this is really what I'd like to propose here, Yeshayahu is consciously playing off of Amos' Nevuot, helping us date them a little more than Amos perhaps came just a little before, right? A contemporary, but it seems that Amos' Nevuot are already very well known by the time that Yeshayahu incorporates them. Isn't this exciting? Okay, now we get back to the message over here. Of Edom and Hatra'ah. So it's actually, right, it's two, and then the third, meaning, and then, here there's one more. So that's exactly it. So Yair Zakovich maintains that it wasn't necessarily a biblical, again, it wasn't a biblical times way of counting, but from prophecy and on, like from, apparently, and everyone seemed to count this way, that this is something that depicts the way that people thought and the way that people lived from the time, really, of Knisa La'am Yisrael, La'eretz Yisrael. An interesting idea. And, again, seems to be consistent. Now I'd like you to see the last part. After he rebukes, basically, Ephraim, and after he speaks about again, what happens to them in terms of their punishment. So now we continue again with Pasuk. Here we go. Again, right after we were up to, yes, Pasuk. Hey, Hai Ashur Shevet Api Umatehu Biadam Za'ami. Again, I know that your next class is waiting to start. So just to anticipate, we're going to start on a very high note next week, Bezrat Hashem. Who's he going to talk about now? He just berated Ephraim. And basically the message, though, it seems to be to Ahaz. Again, look, look, they don't understand what's going on. They're still justifying. They don't recognize that God is still angry with them. They're not doing tshuva. They think that they're going to rebuild their homes. Oh, they're so, so silly. Again, because this is going to lead to three stages thereafter. And now he says, but don't worry, because what is going to happen? Ashur, who's coming to destroy them, Ashur is also going to be destroyed. Why is he telling Ahaz this? That don't worry, Ashur is also going to be destroyed. Does it pay for you to have an alliance with Ashur? Right now, it looks like it does, because they have the upper hand over Aram and Yisrael. But for the long term, no, because God is going to destroy them. Why is God going to destroy them, in keeping with the theme with which we began? They're hurting God's people. Well, they're hurting God's people because the people have sinned. It's true, but ultimately, they are hurting God's people, and therefore they're going to be punished for being the ones hurting God's people. So we're going to start with the punishments of Ashur next time, and with this we're going to continue with the Yeshayahu Achaz dialogue that will continue till Perek Yud Bet. Shavua Tov.